This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Got things banging against my... Did I tell you what I got my wife for Christmas, Nicole, besides the new phone?
No, I don't think I heard another gift.
I got the old version about 6 years ago, and generally, wives don't like anything to do with household cleaning, but I got the latest version of the iRobot vacuum. Whew! I'm telling you, if you have a dog, it is the best, because we weren't vacuuming daily with the dog. You know, we'd get lazy, we'd vacuum sometimes, you know, every 4 or 5 days, once a week sometimes. And I can't believe what a difference it makes. But it was just banging against my office door right as I was coming on the air here. So I have to be careful about that. They're amazing. And I tell you what, the old one that I got, because I got one of the first generation ones, and I want to say it was 6, 7, 8 years ago. And the new ones, they're pretty pricey, but my gosh, they're good. And that's a chore that I just can't stand. If we could find something, we've talked about this before. If somebody would invent something that would automatically unload the dishwasher, then we'd really have something.
That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be really cool. I mean, my family, we were actually just talking about this the other day, that by 2021, we thought we'd have, you know, Jetson-style technology going on, like a Rosie doing the dishes and making dinner. But
yeah, okay. Hey, I got some breaking news here. Yesterday, and you may have just heard it in Heather's news, yesterday we talked to a woman who was brutally kicked in the face while she was planting bulbs in a concrete cutout in downtown Seattle on 4th and Blanchard. A guy was just walking down the sidewalk, and all of a sudden he just blindsided for no reason, just kicked Tracy in the face, fracturing 10 bones in her face and her head and her orbital eye socket. And right after we got off the air with Tracy, we found out that the police had caught the guy. And so Tracy joins us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Tracy, it's wonderful to talk with you again today.
Hi, Dory. Nice to speak to you. I'm a bit tired and a little bit of pain, but nice to talk to you.
Well, you know what? We were talking yesterday, and your other phone line was ringing, and I speculate, because we found out right as we got off the air with you that they had caught the guy, and I said, I wonder if that was Seattle police calling Tracy to let her know that they caught the guy. What was it, the cops calling you?
It was Detective Cruz, who's been running the case, and he's the person I've been talking to. And I looked across and I saw it was him, and literally left a message. Hey, we've got him. He's booked under felony assault. He's right here. I'm going to be here for a little while, but we can talk later. And that was great news.
I'll keep this brief because we don't have the greatest phone connection. But what was your reaction? Because you told me yesterday how much pain you were in. And I think just as importantly to you, you were worried that this guy was going to do it to some other woman and maybe kill the next person. He'd already done it, allegedly, to a woman on a bus the day before. He did it to you the next day. What was your reaction when you heard that they had this guy in custody?
Oh, it was just pure relief. It was a weight had been lifted off me. Literally, right before then, I was thinking, I don't know if I can walk around the corner where I'd always felt safe. And then instantly, it was okay. I actually did walk to the corner, and I had an interview with the Little News, and I felt so much better. It was
so
it was
felt safe for the first
turnaround.
Time. Hey, I'll tell you something interesting. I talked with another guy on the show yesterday. He had been jumped by four people, three young men and a woman, on Saturday evening in Belltown. He was sharing his story with me, and he got hold of Nicole last night. He says it was his brother who spotted your attacker, and he says he followed the guy until the police got there. So the brother of another Belltown victim, at least that's what he's telling us, that he was the one who spotted and made sure that your attacker was caught.
It's what sounds community has been incredible to me.
You know what, Tracy? We have such a bad phone connection. I can't hear what you're saying. Let me ask you one other question. Give me a 3-second answer. I've had a lot of listeners ask, if things were reversed, they would file, along with the felony assault, they would file a hate crime charge if it was... you know, very likely they would if it was a white attacker and black victims. Do you think that the prosecutor should look at a hate crime charge given, you and the woman on the bus who got kicked in the head?
I think it's more about a man against a woman. I don't think it's about a color. I think it's about violence. It's particularly violence against women.
Okay. Hey, I will let you go with that because we do have such a tough connection. But Tracy, I'm very happy for you. I hope you can travel about safely, knowing that this guy is in custody. Okay.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you for your support.
Absolutely. Okay. Take care. Tracy joining us live. Sorry about the phone connection, but we talked with another Belltown victim yesterday, and he tells us it was his brother. And Nicole, am I getting that right? Because you got that information last night that it was the guy we talked to, his name is Kevin, who was jumped by four young people in Belltown on Saturday. And it was Kevin's brother that spotted the guy they've arrested in Tracy's attack?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. The same hour we talked to Kevin, his brother was tracking the guy. They caught him and then called Tracy during your interview with her. So it was just kind of this wild connection that happened in the first 2 hours of the show.
And then I know our friends and news partners, Gary Horker did a great job covering the story for Cairo 7, and they got the picture of the guy out there too. So this is a good community effort to track down and catch the guy. So,
and Gary's actually working on a bunch of people asked him for help organizing a plant of these bulbs that she was trying to plant. And so they're putting together this group that's going to go finish up the planting for her.
Yeah, I saw that in Gary's story last night. Well, I mentioned yesterday. It's really cool. My oldest daughter, she grows. And you know about this. Dave Wyman is... he is fanatical about his dahlias, and he plants the bulbs and he grows the dahlias. And my oldest daughter grows dahlias. And so she and Wyman, they're always trading pictures. And when, you know, we go to each other's house, the couples, my wife and me and the Wymans, my daughter will send her dahlias to Dave and he'll send his to her. It's really been cool because to watch how passionate my daughter is about dahlias, and she was digging up all the bulbs and wrapping them in saran wrap a few weeks ago, and it really gets into your blood though.
I didn't know that that those were being planted by citizens, and you know I don't know when I'll go to Seattle again because it's a little nerve wracking right now. But but that's good to. I mean, that's nice to know that those are people volunteering their time to plant those flowers, and it kind of makes you think differently when you see all the pretty down there.
Yeah, it's very, very sweet. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15, one of the all-time great Seattle Seahawks is in trouble once again. And for the same reason that got him in trouble earlier last year, Earl Thomas, who is not only one of the greatest safeties in Seahawks history, he's a likely NFL Hall of Famer. I mean, he's just as good as they got at the safety position. You may recall, early last year, Earl Thomas was allegedly cheating on his wife. And she used a phone app to track where he was. And he was at an Airbnb with his brother. And they were with a couple of women. And when Earl Thomas's wife went into the house, she caught Earl in bed with a woman. Her brother was in bed with another woman. And she had a gun. And she was chasing Earl Thomas around with the gun and chasing him out to the car. Well, it has now happened again with Earl Thomas. His wife has been granted by a judge a restraining order because of an alleged drunken attack the day after Christmas. Earl Thomas, he was with the Baltimore Ravens. They cut him because he was so much trouble. I mean, he was just causing so much turmoil with his new team. He's been ordered to stay at least 400 feet away from his wife, Nina Thomas's house in Austin, Texas. She was at her parents' home, and they were going to meet with Earl because they have kids. And they said, for Christmas, let's get us all together. The kids would love it, but we'll do it at the wife's parents' house so that there would be, you know, some security, apparently. Well, it turns out, according to the court documents, instead of showing up at Christmas, Earl chose to stay out all night drinking on Christmas. He went to the house on December 26th, was visibly drunk. He told his wife to perform a sex act on him in front of their daughter, is what she alleges in court documents. She then locked him out of the home. He got irate. He started beating on windows. He shattered one window with his fist, leaving blood all over the front porch. And she also claims that he threatened to come back to her parents' house and to burn it down and burn all of her things. And you think about this, these poor children. They wanted to be together with mom and dad on Christmas. And these poor, poor kids instead witnessed, supposedly, allegedly, according to court documents, horrible domestic violence. The wife filed for divorce in November of this year. You may recall the incident last year when he was sleeping with a woman, his brother was sleeping with another woman in the same house, and his wife came and chased him around at gunpoint. Earl Thomas posted on Instagram this bizarre statement.
I mean, it's really not anybody's business. It's pissing me off that it got out, but it's the world we live in today. But instead of talking about this, just keep us in y'all prayers. And stuff like this happens.
Stuff like this happens. He said, no, it doesn't. It doesn't just happen. You got to take some pretty specific steps to be with your brother and two women in a house close enough to your wife to her track you on some GPS system. All right, and finally, in the Fastest 15, I remember when I went to Vegas for the first time after the Mirage was built. The Mirage was like the first Caesar's Palace. Back in the 60s was this big themed hotel casino that started to change Vegas. But then in the 80s, the Mirage was the next evolution of Las Vegas, a gigantic hotel, the volcanoes outside, and they paid Siegfried and Roy $40 million a year to perform exclusively in the showroom at the Mirage. A few years ago, Roy was attacked by one of their white tigers on stage. Roy had a stroke because of the attack, and he died a couple of years ago. And now today at age 81, Siegfried of Siegfried and Roy, Siegfried Fischbacher, He has passed away as well. So both halves of Siegfried and Roy, they changed entertainment on the Vegas Strip. And, of course, it also led to one of the better Chris Rock lines when he was talking about the tiger that attacked Roy.
Siegfried and Roy, the tiger bit the man in the head, and everybody's mad at the tiger. Talk about the tiger went crazy. That tiger ain't go crazy. That tiger went tiger.
Yes, it did. And all that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
In just 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Well, it's usually hump day with Heward, but we had this little presidential impeachment going on yesterday during the big show. So Brock Heward will join us today. We have a lot to talk about. Next, here on the Dory Monson Show.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's Hump Day with Heward.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
It is time for our weekly visit with Brock Heward from Fox Sports and 710 ESPN Seattle. And, man, the craziness just continues. We were going to talk to you last week on Wednesday, Brock, but our nation's capital was overrun, and now we have impeachment this week. It's there's all kinds of stuff going on in the world right now.
Well, Hump Day with Heward can fit Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whenever you need it, Dory.
Exactly. You're a utility man.
Yeah, that's
you're
right.
Like a good baseball utility man. So let's start with the Seahawks, because after the season came to an end last weekend, they go 12-4, they win their division, they get a home game without fans, which was significant, I think, and then they lose to the Rams. So we're starting to see some changes already, aren't we?
Yeah, Dory, they can't beat the Rams. So, I mean, that's a problem. And you know from coaching basketball for all your decades, you can be a super talented team, you can beat other teams, and then there's just a team that you just don't match up with. And I don't know who that was for Dory. I don't know if that was Meadowdale. I don't know if that was Shorewood. I don't know if that was Linwood. I don't know who it was, Dory, but yeah. Whoever it was that you just, unfortunately, your team's personnel just did not match up with size or speed or strength. I mean, the Seahawks at the line of scrimmage now, for all of Russell Wilson's time. The Rams, I believe he was, I think he's 5-11 in his last 16 games against them. I mean, he beats everybody else. He's 14-2 over the Niners in the division. He wins out of the division. He beats Rodgers. He beats Brady. He beats Mahomes a couple years ago at home. But those Rams at the line of scrimmage, Dory, in their size and strength, and Aaron Donald, the best player in football, he just devours Russell and devours that line of scrimmage. And yeah, it was a bad matchup and certainly a bad performance over the weekend.
Well, and you know what was really unusual? After the game, Russell Wilson, he usually does, he gets showered up pretty quick. Then he goes to the podium. He's wearing his nice suits. He's always dressed to the nines. And he goes and addresses the media. I was shocked because I had never seen this before. Russell was wearing a sweatshirt, a hoodie, went to the podium. It took much longer than usual. What do we read into that? That he still hadn't showered and after a couple hours said, okay, I still have to go talk to the media here.
Kind of reminded me of the Super Bowl in 2014, to be honest with you, that he and Pete, and I remember talking to Pete the next day after that bomb blew up in their face. With one of the most horrific plays, you know, if this has been the best team, the most dynastic team in the history of our city, that play alone was probably the worst shot emotionally and in every way. And after that game, it took Pete and Russ, and they had to get, you know, Pete says, we got to get to the truth of it, right? And they spent a bunch of time, but it wasn't 2 hours. And even then, Russell was, as you said, showered and dressed and dealt with the media head on. Yeah, this time, this was 2 hours. And I would imagine, you know, A, you have the luxury of doing that because everything is done via Zoom. There's no press right there or anything. So they're just waiting on their computers, getting more steamed probably by the minute. And yeah, it was Russell just airing it out, just saying, this is just untenable. This isn't working. What we're doing is not working. This team in our own division, and I'm tired of just getting the heck beat out of me by them over and over and over again. And so I'm sure that was emotional and passionate. And then, you know, what, 48 hours later, Pete kind of throws the offensive coordinator under the bus Monday when he addressed the media. By Tuesday afternoon, Shoddy is the scapegoat in this. Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator, fired and searching now for the third coordinator in Russell's 10 years.
So when you're paying Russell Wilson
$35 million
a year, I mean, he's 18%. One guy is 18% of your team's payroll. Do you just go to Russell and say, look, you pick your offensive coordinator? Or is that not part of Pete's constitution to assign that sort of power to a player?
Well, when Aaron Rodgers was making that for 14 years, Dory, and eventually he kind of ran out Mike McCarthy, it wasn't Aaron Rodgers that got to pick the next head coach and coordinator and voice. So usually doesn't work that way. Now, Tom Brady, yeah, he kind of got to pick where he wanted to go, and he's still in the playoffs at 43 freaking years of age. I don't know how he's doing that and playing this upcoming weekend against 42-year-old Drew Brees. So maybe Drew and maybe Tom at that stage, you know, where they're drawing Social Security, maybe they have a say, but I don't think so. The way that Pete operates, the way that John Schneider, the background that Schneider came from in Green Bay with Favre to Rodgers and all of that stuff, you know, I think this is what they get paid to do. They get paid to look at the big picture. They get paid to say, what is going to be the best way to utilize Russell? What's going to be the best way to build this team and the line of scrimmage? I mean, the line of scrimmage, it's got to change. Until that changes, I don't care what you're paying Russ. I don't care who you're playing the quarterback. Until that line of scrimmage changes, you're not going to get back to being world champions like they were a decade ago.
Well, and last thing for you, I had Paul Moyer on my show on Monday, right after the game. And we were talking about, because it was Russell Wilson's worst game as a Seahawk. And we were talking about, is he too interested in being a celebrity and not enough in being a quarterback? And I even referenced you, Brock, because you told me when you backed up Peyton Manning in Indianapolis, this was a guy who had no life outside of preparing for football. And yeah, he'd host SNL in the off season. He'd do some other stuff. But during football season, he wasn't doing business deals. He wasn't hosting award shows. He was, I mean, I think as you described to me, he would go to practice, he would come home, grab some food, go into his home theater, and watch film the rest of the night. And that was about his life.
And if Ashley wanted to hang out with him, she's hanging out in the theater, in the film room.
Yeah,
and he and I got into it one time, too. And now we're neighbors, kind of. Not you know, direct neighbors here in the Colorado area, but it's been neat to connect with him and see him now, Dory, in a different light as a dad, loving his kids. And I remember getting into him with him one time, like, you know, because he said, yeah, I don't think we can have kids, man. I don't think I can do that while I'm playing. And I said, well, I'm glad your dad didn't think that way. And he didn't appreciate that at the time. It was probably a little bit of a Dory Monson move. Just, you know, punch right between the eyes. Not a lot of grace in that moment as I said it to him. And once it came out, I'm like, whoa. I mean, I didn't mean quite like that. But, you know, your special memories as a kid was following Archie around and you and Eli playing and, you know, being in the Superdome and everything else. But he just felt like he couldn't commit to being a dad while doing this profession. It wasn't until late in his career that they have their twins. And now to see him in the light as a dad's a pretty neat deal. But yes, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, maniacal. I mean, maniacal. With every minute. Now, I would defend Russell a little bit, Dory, and say in season, the dude is a machine. He really works hard. Now, does he have more interests and doing more things and married to a celebrity and lots of those other factors as well? Yes. And, you know, that balance is something certainly that he's going to have to continue to strive for as he gets older, too.
I just, I don't know if I like when you said you punched him between the eyes and then you called it a Dory Monson move. How is somebody punching somebody between the eyes a me move?
Well, you should appreciate that, Dory. Like, I didn't say punched him, you know, like in the belly button, or, you know, punched him in the throat. Like, I gave you all the way between the eyes. So right. I thought you'd appreciate that.
Knowing that I can't reach the eyes of you big boys.
Oh, I didn't say that.
All right. Brock Heward with us. I'm glad you came by. Thank you.
Hey, you can come ziplining with us out in the Rocky Mountains. You can come tubing with us. Yes. You and the fam, Suzanne, are ever going to get out and come see us, yep, crying out loud?
My wife and I are going to be Rocky Mountain High with you guys next month. We're working on the planning right now.
Okay.
Come to visit.
Okay, yep. Good. I'm glad the whole audience heard that. So good. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll hold you to it.
We'll go ziplining. I'll do that.
Oh, man. That was fun. That was really fun. Okay. Yes. All right, buddy. Okay, Will you hold it down? Punch people between the eyes. Tell them the truth.
Expect to be entertained. I want to be entertained every second that I'm there. That's all I ask for. I need lots of stimulation.
Okay. Goodbye, Dory.
All right, Brock Heward. You can hear his podcast. Go to 710 ESPN Seattle. And we have lots more to come. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on. Rolls on. Rolls on.
Boy, there may be a new candidate for most insensitive person in the media, or most just radical, wild-eyed, biased person in the media. CNN has a guy named Jake Tapper. And Jake Tapper, he really prides himself on being quite the hipster. But he has gotten so radical that even by CNN standards, and I will tell you, it really makes me wonder about his coworkers too, that somebody could hear Jake Tapper on the air say something like I'm about to play for you and not question it. Bob Good is a Republican congressman. He lost both of his legs when he stepped on an IED while serving in our military. And so he's in a wheelchair. He has prosthetic legs. Jake Tapper yesterday was talking, like almost all Republicans, Bob Good voted against the impeachment of Donald Trump. But listen to the shot that Jake Tapper takes at a man who lost both of his legs while fighting for the freedom of all of us, including Jake Tapper.
Congressman Brian Mast, mm-hmm, a Republican from Florida, who lost his legs, by the way, fighting.
You know what? I said Bob. Brian Mast is the congressman who lost his legs.
Congressman Brian Mast, mm-hmm, a Republican from Florida, who lost his legs, by the way, fighting for democracy abroad. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know what his... I don't know about his commitment to it here in the United States.
Isn't that unbelievable? Because he did not vote to impeach Donald Trump, Jake Tapper questions whether this man who paid an incredible price serving the country, he questions his patriotism, his belief in democracy. Listen to this again. Guy with his legs blown off.
Congressman Brian Mast, mm-hmm, a Republican from Florida, who lost his legs, by the way, fighting for democracy abroad. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know about his commitment to it here in the United States.
I'm telling you right now, if I said something like that, I'd get fired, and I'd understand why. The fact that CNN puts up with questioning the patriotism of somebody who had his legs blown off, well, you know, yuppie hipsters like Jake Tapper can spout off anything he wants. It's pretty amazing. And I played another soundbite for you yesterday that's creating quite a bit of controversy today. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she says that now that Democrats are in charge of all the branches of government, except for the judiciary, of course, but they have the House, the Senate, and the White House, and now that censorship is becoming more acceptable, it's really interesting because Democrats and liberals used to be against censorship. Back in the 60s and the 70s, they were about freedom. They were about, you know, speaking your mind. If you want to speak out against government, you should do so. Be a radical. Be rebellious. Don't just follow the crowd. That used to be what liberalism was all about. Now it's the exact opposite. It's people like me who are more libertarian than anything, although I don't call myself a libertarian. But I believe in freedom. I believe in not going with the crowd. And that's put me in the crosshairs of the government that's in charge. And I've seen that in our state, where our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, has personally tried to take me down. And now it's being suggested by AOC and others that with the Democrats in charge, that they may have panels that decide what free speech is acceptable.
There's absolutely a commission that's being discussed, but it seems to be more investigatory in style rather than truth and reconciliation. And so I think that's an interesting concept for us to explore. And, you know, I do think that several members of Congress in some of my discussions have brought up media literacy, because that is a part of what happened here. And we're going to have to figure out how we rein in our media environment.
Wow. A panel will figure out what media to rein in. I bet that people like me will be targeted by that panel. Hold on, it's going to get bumpy. Big Lead 2 is next.